Okay, everyone, this is Gordon W2TTT with Lucky, who's somewhere in his backyard, meandering around and being obnoxious. But anyway, we love our puppy. All right, well, this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Are there any stations with emergency or parting traffic? Please call K2BAR. Yeah, that's the right answer. All righty. This is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. This net is conducted weekly on a frequency of 146.955 megahertz for the purpose of having a conversation about amateur radio, electronics, telecommunications, computers, our art and science of what we do, the things we do that are interesting, the things we've done that are not so interesting that we don't want to do again. Our aspirations for doing things either for the first time or maybe things we want to do again, and the like. So, with that in mind, we organize ourselves a little differently on check-in than most other nets. We check in with our call sign, our name, and we indicate whether we have a question, a comment, a for sale or swap or wanted item, or some combination of things or none of the above. Now you might ask, why do we care if it's none of the above? Because we want to tailor the net to be of interest to you. And we can't do that if we don't know if you're there. So with no further ado, let's get rocking. Call stations whose call signs begin with the letter November. Please call K2BAR.
K2B. Here is November, Zulu 2 kilowatt. Paul. Question for Gordon.
Okay, Paul, good evening. Any other Novembers? Alrighty. We should also point out that we will have check-ins for stations operating on Echolink, which can be used via the K2. What is it now? Oh, I'm in good shape here. What the call sign is now? Brain dead. Well, preoccupied by my missing dog here, so forgive me. But we'll come back to that. Alrighty. In the meantime, Paul, I got you checked in with a question. Very good. And are there any stations with a call sign? With a call sign that begins with Alpha. Alrighty, how about call signs beginning with Whiskey?
K2JEK9 with a comment.
Matt P. in Pearl River, New York. Jim, good evening, Gordon. No questions or comments this evening, just listening.
WI2LYP, Bill, Riverbell, just listening.
I got Don with a comment, and I got Jim with just a check-in. Good evening to you both. Are there any other Whiskeys?
WI2LYP, Bill, just hanging out.
K2BAR, W2CH, Ray White Plains with a comment.
W2CH. I got you with your comment, and Lucky has just strolled back in, which is great. Any other Whiskeys?
WU2S, Randy in Washington Township with a comment.
A want and a comment.
Okay, let's see. I have Randy WU2S with a comment. Who is the other station under E2?
WE2R, Charlie.
What's your preference, Charles? Good evening.
Just listening and enjoying the net.
Okay, I got W2R. Who was the other station?
W2LPN. The name is Rick with a question.
No questions or comments at this time.
Okay, so we got two for the price of one there. I have a question from Rick. And who was the other station with no questions or comments?
W2NPR. Hector, no comments or questions at this time.
in the actor yet. Busy check-in tonight. It's for whiskeys, man. I got a cavalcade of whiskeys. Alrighty. Any other whiskeys?
WI2LYP, Bill. Just listening.
I got you too, Bill. Sorry about that. Yep. I got you as well, Mr. Willie Z. Any other whiskeys?
Alright. I'll try my 100 milliwatts again. This is WI2W. I'm looking for something, and I have a comment.
Do you have a question and a comment? Awesome. Good evening, Mr. Steve. All right. Any other whiskeys? All right, yeah, I had to take a lot of the paperwork together for that. Boy, I got real busy real fast. All righty. Let's see, who would be next? All right, how about Kilo 2s?
K2AMI, Tony. No questions, no comments, just listening.
Okay, Tony, good evening to you. Any other Kilo 2s? Any other kilos?
82DDK. Working. I like that term.
Okay, very good. Good evening, Gary. Any other kilos?
82 EMV AJ, Washington Tangent. No questions or comments.
Good evening to you. Welcome aboard. Any other kilos?
82 CWW, Chris, just listening.
Very nice. Good evening, Chris. Any other kilos? Are there any stations on the Echolink?
This is KE2FLG. My name is John. I'm at the Echolink. Just monitor.
Connected. N2OEL.
I have N2OEL, and I have also another station, John. John, good evening to you. Noel, what is your preference for this evening?
No questions, no comments.
Okie doke. Welcome aboard. And for those who were not paying attention before when I stumbled over myself, the station we want to use is for Echolink is K2 Foxtrot Juliet. A thousand pardons for that little foobar. Did a little brain fart myself here. All right. And John, I got you, KD2 FLG. What's your preference this evening?
Actually my first Echolink contact. I'm a very new ham, and I'm just trying to learn a little bit more about everything.
Connected, W2TTT.
Okay, John, very good. Well, welcome aboard, and the first Echolink contact, we're proud to be that first contact. All right. I'm going to disconnect from the Echolink just to make sure that others have a chance to use the ports that are available. But very nice, and good evening to you and Noel on Echolink. Are there any other stations wishing to check in at this time? K2BAR.
This is KC2TBD. No questions.
Good evening, Ron. KC2TBD, W2TTT. K2BAR. Very good. Welcome aboard. Any other stations? Alrighty, well, let's get to it. W2JEK, you go first, K2BAR.
K2BAR and the net, W2JEK, good evening, everybody. Announcing that the Bergen Amateur Radio Association will have their next DE test session on February the 21st. That's a Friday night at 7 o'clock. At the Westwood Regional High School in classroom 123. If you're coming, you'll need one form of ID, such as a photo ID, such as a driver's license or a passport, or two forms of non-photo ID. Test fee is $15. If you have a license already, you will need your bring your license, your current license, and a photocopy of that license. And if you do not have a license, you'll need a Social Security number. And if you have an older license that does not have an FRN number, you will need also. If you wish to bring a calculator, you can, but the memory must have been erased, nothing stored in it. Cell phones, iPods, etc. may not be used as calculators. With that, back to net, W2JK.
Very good, very good. Hey, Don, could you explain why the various IDs are required and such like that? It's kind of confusing as to why, you know, what's this FRN about and what's the Social Security number about and this, that, and the other thing. And while you explain that to everybody, I'm going to transition from downstairs up to the shack. So if you could carry on with that, I'd appreciate it. K2BAR.
Okay, this is W2JEK. Yeah. Well, of course, the first thing you need is ID. We are the person taking the test and not somebody else. In other words, if somebody had a technician license comes in to upgrade to general, well, this person coming in is not the actual person who is the holder of the license. It's somebody who was taking the thing for him. There, things like that, I guess, have occurred in the past. Somebody has taken a test for somebody else. So that's one reason we have the ID. As far as the, we usually use a passport or a driver's license for that, but there are various other things. If you do not have a driver's license and something else that doesn't have a photo on it could be used, mail that's addressed to you at your house, or reached postmark, something like that, can also be used. But, we have that. Copies of the license, naturally, if you are licensed, we want to see your license and see that you actually have what you say you have. And you're a tech, but you're not whatever. So that's another thing. Prove that you are licensed, and then there are other things. The iPod business and the cell phone, they have the ability to take pictures. We don't want anybody to take with one of those things in operation around our site. No anybody taking pictures of the exam booklets or whatnot. We don't want anything recorded so that the test group can be compromised. Have five versions of the test, and we don't want any of them compromised. Well, that's part of it. Courtney, there. Maybe you can ask some more questions. Back to you. Okay, to DARW2JEK.
Yep, I'm here. All good. Well, that was very helpful. I actually heard most of that. I left the radio on downstairs, so I could hear it booming up the stairs. And I always have a radio on 955 in the shack, and I happen to have left the volume on, or up, I should say, so got to hear the other end of it as I moved from first to third floor, and that was good. That was very helpful. Does anybody have any questions to clarify anything that Don just went over? K2BAR.
Boring?
Okay, very fine. Anybody else? Alrighty. Somehow or another I've got myself into reverse mode, which is pretty funny actually. But anyway, it is what it is. Alright, Don, anything you want to add?
Nothing at this time, Gordon. Just back to that unless somebody has a question, where they might have a question.
Alright, very good. Yeah. I found it interesting, nonetheless. Thank you for doing what you do with the test team. A lot of guys get their ham licenses courtesy of our test team, and provide a huge valuable resource to amateurs all over the metropolitan area who come to our test sessions. So again, thank you for what you do. Alrighty. NZ2K, Mr. Paul, you had a question.
Good evening to everybody. What a healthy crowd here tonight. Nice to hear everybody through Echolink and all the various locations. Gordon, just to follow up, I was wondering if you had any more news on the NJ2BS repeater. I've noticed that it's been locked up for a long time at times, and now it's not just only idents, but sometimes it seems like it's running for quite a few minutes. So I wonder if the controller really has gone and cease and desisted, or wonder if you had any more time to think about that K2BAR from NZ2K.
Connected N1STU.
2EIR light checking.
N2NBR, ditto.
I was transmitting, but apparently not getting in. I'm not sure why, so we'll figure that out. Oh, I see why. I had the wrong PL set up. Sorry about that. So, Paul, yes, we have made some moves. As I think I understood you, you did hear an ID, right?
No, sorry, guys. I'll just make this my final here. No, it's just on the app, on every hour it should identify. That's the hour identifier, and at the hour, you know, it comes on to identify no matter what. The controller is putting something out there and transmitting, and that's what I would expect it to do. But then it seems like the transmitter just stays locked up and on for a long time afterwards. Not just dropping out after a minute or two, but it might be running about 10 or 15 minutes transmitting over. But nothing coming through.
Yeah, that's something I don't want to discuss here, but fair enough. I'll make another phone call tomorrow and see what we can do to take it to the next level, okay?
Yeah, it's a 2K. It wasn't for anything else, but just curious if you had any more ideas on it, on the controller or something. But all right, probably better offline then. All right, thank you. Good job on the net, Gordon. Keep it going, and really enjoy this NZ2K.
Whoa, sorry about that. All right, very good, Paul. Thank you very much. We're having some fits and starts about this issue with the repeaters, so I understand. I do have an announcement, speaking of repeaters. This repeater group is going to have its brunch on Sunday morning at the 76 house in Japan, and we're hoping that people will like to come. We have a nice group, and the brunch is $32. That's a champagne brunch, and we have our own private space, and it's really nice, so if anyone's interested, please send me a note at w2ttt@att.net or arl.net. I'd be happy to hook you up with Dick, K1JMI, who's actually handling the reservations. Anyway, are there any other stations with comments on either the subject of the other repeater having problems or repeater problems in general? Or the much more pleasant subject of having a champagne brunch on Sunday. This is K2BAR.
K2BAR, late check-in, brunch.
Howie, go. And actually, don't go yet, Howie. Who is the other station?
N2NBR.
N2NBR, okay. Are you checking in?
Yes, I was just, I had a question for anybody on frequency.
All right, let's go Howie's first. K2EIR, K2BAR. Go ahead.
Okay, regarding brunch, since you solicited it, I won't be there. Sorry, not this year. But I do have a question for Noel. And
Otherwise, nothing, and good evening to everyone. K2EIR.
What's your question?
The question for Noel is, this is the first time both of us are on the net, and while some others have relayed what Rocky found, I'd like to hear it from Noel in his own words about the grounding problem and, you know, a little bit more description. I think it merits that because of Noel's a very bright guy, and if he didn't find it, it's been something that probably will happen to one of us sooner or later, and the more we know, the better we'll be able to handle it. K2EIR. Noel, go ahead.
Well, it's what almost all of our radios now are protected against with the two fuses, one in the positive lead and one in the ground lead. Actually, I suspected it because of the way the engine would start sometimes, and sometimes it was dead. One time out of 20, it just wouldn't turn over. Yet we towed it to the garage, and then it worked fine. And I asked the garage guy to please take off the ground cable, polish the connection, put some silicone conductive grease. We had this whole discussion where I said, silicone conductive grease, and he said, no, we don't need this, just clean it. And it wasn't until I took it to Rocky KD2BOR, and he said, oh, Noel, your ground cable is not connected to the engine. All you have is the small ground, which is a 12-gauge wire, 10-gauge wire, going to the body that grounds the lights and the other stuff. And what was happening is, when the engine shifted just right, it would connect some part of the body, and there would be a good ground, and I could start the car. When the engine shifted just a little bit different, there would be no ground connection there. Everything would be insulated, and the car wouldn't start. And at that time, I had a radio hooked up. I would have had a great ground, like I do now, on my antenna mast. If anybody has seen it, we have 2 half-inch ground struts going from the base of the antenna, and Rocky took and ran it down through ground bolts underneath the ones that are holding the trailer hitch on, and cleaned everything, and greased it, and tightened it down with star washers. So we have a very nice, low-resistance ground wire connection with these, maybe they're even 3/4-inch braids that I got from Gene KJI. So therefore, if the same thing happened tomorrow, and there was no fuse in the 10-gauge ground wire that I have, I would have a perfect circuit coming into the radio through the power lead, going across my circuit board internally, and out the antenna connection to the coax shield, directly to that beautiful ground that I have there. And I would watch the inside of my radio circuit board flash like a getter in a tube, or maybe a flash bulb. Anyways, that's what those fuses are designed to protect us against. And you could suspect it, but if the guy at the gas station doesn't believe you, there's nothing that can be done.
Repeater. Timeout. Clear.
Okay, you timed it out, Noel, but so what you're basically saying is that you're a hostage to your mechanic's willingness and expertise.
Yes. Rocky, however, believed me and followed the ground wire wherever it may go, and it wound up behind the headlights someplace.
Right, and this is also a classic reason why you put a fuse in your ground lead. Do you want to explain why?
Because I have this beautiful ground at the antenna. The coaxial cable is hooked to the antenna base, and that is a beautiful ground. And so therefore, the radio chassis has a beautiful ground connection to the vehicle body. And if for any reason your ground cable came loose or was disconnected, like in my case, or had a bad connection to the engine when you're trying to hit that starter, all 200 or 300 amps would attempt to flow through the internal circuitry of your radio in the black power lead to the circuit board, out the coax, and I believe your circuit board would flash like a flash bulb. It would be most unpleasant, and that's why our VHF radios and almost every radio nowadays, HF2, that runs on 12 volts, has two fuses, one in the hot and one in the ground. Back to that then.
Yes, because if you should try to pass that 200 or 300 amp starting current through the radio, at least the fuse will protect the radio from becoming fried. Very, very nice. All right, anybody else have any comments about this? All righty. Well, thank you, Noel. That's very entertaining. Did you want to add anything else to that?
No, but if you ever want to talk about this Sega Taurus I'm putting on there, I'll be happy to discuss.
Sorry, the second what that you're putting on there?
I was making a dinosaur rudder fringe. Remember the one with the spikes? With that metal bracket I put in, hopefully I'm going to try to get 5 resonators on. Not to be used while mobile, of course, but it'd be in a down position. And my friend the Mennonite welder machined a block of plastic and took some 3/8 fine thread rod, made a support, and the rod happens to be a quarter wave of 2 meters, so now the mag mount with the 3 magnets is holding up the Hustler antenna, and it's going to sort of look like a Sega Taurus with those 5 resonators sticking out there.
Certainly does. It really does. Alrighty. It really is kind of impressive. You sent me the pictures of that, and they certainly put together quite a bit of machine work for you in order to make that look good. And boy, it really does look good. So kudos to you for getting that done. Anything else you want to add about that?
But my intention, just before I leave, to connect up the JSU-FC40 antenna tuner and use that to broadband the Hustler. So hopefully I'll cover 80 through 10 and perhaps even 6, since they claim the FC40 antenna tuner will take a CB whip and tune 40 through 6. So anyways, I'm trying to get that thing so that I can pull to a remote location on my trip around the country, use one set screw, rotate the antenna up into the upright position, and be on the air. And that should take me less than a minute, and maybe a minute and a half to put it down, attach the 2 ropes through the center of the car to keep the thing from flapping around them, and away I go. By the way, in case anybody doesn't know, the idea is I'm going to leave here as soon as we get a break in the weather, hopefully by next Tuesday or Wednesday. I'm going to go to Florida, visit some friends. I intend to go to the Key West and stay on Marathon Island. I intend to go visit my brother in Mississippi, my sister in Mississippi, make my way to Jim Jackson, and each morning I'll try to get onto the 75-meter net while I'm mobile. On the vehicle itself, I also have a 31-foot 10-gauge wire up on the roof, also with an FC-40, and it's set at the corner of the upright ladder. Ladder's about 8 feet, and the base of the ladder was grounded by this RV dealer to the chassis. Haven't even tried it out yet, but that's what I intend to do. I'm going to try to get into the net. Go out and visit Mr. Jackson in Prescott, Arizona. and eventually make my way back here sometime April 15th, early May. Not in a hurry. Don't have a schedule. I'm retired. Back to that info.
That's great. That is absolutely wonderful. Well, any questions about Noel's mobile installation and his really cool multi-band antenna gizmo so that he can, you know, flip up a multi-band antenna on his vehicle, on his car, in addition to the extra multi-band antenna that he's, or the N-fed wire he's got on his motorhome, which he uses to tow the car. All right, very good, Noel. Thank you very much for your time and trouble. Any final comments?
Well, no, not about that. So today's been a busy day. I'm up here in the far north, and they came and they foamed my basement with 4 inches of isocyanate, I think it is, foam. It's closed cell. R value, they claim, is R7 per inch, but it may be as low as R5. Anyway, they put 4 inches on the top 4 feet of my basement walls, which hopefully will make a big difference to stop all the little... I think some of the basement walls were... They were, the house was built in 1925. I don't think it even has mortar in some of the spots, and that sealed everything. The other thing is I finally got a mooring. Had to go down and pay $1,500 to park the boat for next year, but it's in the lake that's close to me, so I don't have to drive 28 miles. I can only drive 4 miles, and I'll be much happier. And I intend to put the quarter-wave Hustler ground-mounted antenna and use the boat as the radio, as the ground plane, I should say. Anyway, I'm going to have lots of fun. Anybody want to take a trip? Got room for one other person. This is N2OL.
Okay, very good. That's just super. All right. Well, thank you. What do you call it? Thank you for your interesting observations on things tonight. I'm going to send it over to N2NBR. He had a question as well. Go ahead, sir, and I forget your name. Forgive me. It's Gordon W2TTT for K2BAR.
Okay, Gordon. Nice to talk to you. We've spoken before. W2TTT, this is N2NBR. Hail here's John. QTH is Northern Westchester County. With about a foot of snow on the ground up here. The streets are all nice and clear, but the rest of the world is kind of white. So, anyway... Will I be changing the subject here if we go to low band coverage?
Absolutely fine, go ahead.
Okay, I am in the process of obtaining an afterburner for my rig here. This particular rig is a 756 Pro 3. And because of I have a mountain behind me, and I can't put too much altitude in the antenna, which I'm going to try to raise it to what is theoretically the legal limit here. I know there are you know, firefights we can all have about, you know, with the various governmental agencies about how high an antenna goes, but I don't know if I want to indulge in that, you know, legal expensively and why and like that. So anyway, I have an afterburner picked out. It's the MFJ Auto Tune. Let's see here. It's the 100. Okay, so that in itself is great, all fine and good, I'm told by everybody. But my problem is that to rhyme with that, meaning I need, let me let this drop, I need an automatic tuner, an antenna tuner to go with it. And at 1300 watts or 1200 watts, the only one I can find is also an MFJ. And it comes in basically in two versions. One is the 998, MFG 998, and that does well. It's a 1,500 watt capacity, and also its brother, so to speak, is a one that has a waterproof container. It's contained inside a waterproof container, presumably a weatherproof, for another $100. But the bad news about that one is that you can't see what's going on inside. There's no external metering, apparently, with unless there's something I can't find in it. So I can't put up without the metering necessary to run one of those things. So, anybody got any ideas about what I can use to go up to, I don't have to go to the legal limit, but I need to go to at least 12.
Boy, that's a really good question. Don, I know you don't normally operate, QRO, but what do you know about high power tuners, I'm sorry.
QRP groups like them because they have very little loss in them compared to a smaller, say, 300 watt tuner. Supposedly they're better for that reason, although I know people that have very good results with the 300 watt tuners. I have something here, I don't know what it's rated at, I think it's good for a kilowatt, but it's just a tuner, just a coil and a capacitor. It's a
that in mind. There was another station underneath you. Who was that?
Through the capacitor. It's
I gotcha. There was another station underneath you. Who was that? Yeah, that might have been the Echo Link. Okay. All right. John, I gotta tell you, I'm a little at a disadvantage, but I would go to the ends of the earth to find another vendor of both your amplifier and your tuner before I would buy an MFJ. Now, granted, they've acquired other product lines, but I've heard variable stories of what happens when they acquire a product line. So I'm wondering what the best way around this is. Just out of curiosity, what other amplifiers did you look at, and why did you discount them? Did you discount them on cost?
To some degree, yes. If I'm in that neighborhood, I might as well, go for broke, as they say. They do offer a MFJ. That is, they do offer a 1-year warranty. You can, damn near hit the thing with a sledgehammer, and they'll guarantee it. That kind of thing. And the same thing applies to the tuner, of course. I did talk to one of the other tuner manufacturers. I'm told they're very good. Of course, I can't remember it. It's a LDG, and they make a fine product, I'm told, for $500, but you can only go up to, I think it's 1,000 watts, and I need to go to at least 12, and in my present scheme of things, let's put it that way.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. You know what I would do? I would, and I mean this in all seriousness, I would actually make a phone call to the league and ask for who might you ask for? I don't have my copy of QSD around. Ask them for the department that handles product reviews, and that should be a good start right there. And what I would do is I would then hunt down product reviews for things that they've done that for both amplifiers and tuners. The guys up there will talk to you about such things like that. They can't recommend it, but they can tell you what they reviewed, and then you can go online and look. Technical department.
From that line of thought,
Got it.
I think somebody mentioned earlier that one of the good ideas that we can come up with is building one myself. And I've been known to do projects like that. I mean, I put together an oscilloscope one time. It took me a week, but I got it done. But yeah, I would like to. I would even consider that. You know, if I don't know why somebody doesn't come up with a better tuner that at a reasonable price within the 1300 watts or 1200 watts, something like that, instead of having to go all the way up to 15.
Yeah, sure. Okay. So yeah, someone reminded me of the department. It's the NRL technical department. That would be a good thing. And you know, depending on what your antenna is, it's not all that hard to do. You should have no big trouble. The real trick is making sure that you have DC, BC, DC components, because having the capability of being fat, dumb, and happy, and making sure that thing runs no matter what is a good idea. So choose your components wisely. Don't go just over the limits of what you need. Go quite a bit more. Anyway. Did anyone else have any comments about amplifiers? Or tuners, I should say.
WI2W.
Steve, go right ahead.
Yeah, good evening. I run an MFJ998 here in my current configuration. I only have a 600 watt amplifier. And it works okay. I do have the buttons and gears and whatnot in front of me. It does get stupid every now and then, and I have to recycle the power on it, but I suppose all automatic antennas do that. And sometimes I expect it to tune because it's got a higher SWR and it doesn't quite tune, so I really would need to know more about your application. For my purposes, it works great. I can keep an eye on it. It has two antenna ports, so I often use the antenna switch to switch between my beam and my wire antenna. So I like it, and at 500 watts or so, it's been rock solid. I don't know what would happen if I tried to put 1500 through it. I would, if I was going to mount this remotely, like you're talking about using the remote version, would want to make sure that I had a way at my operating station to observe the SWR at my amplifier output at all times, so I could tell if something was not working correctly with the tuner. So that would be my only caveat there. As far as, there's two types of tuners. There's manual ones and automatic ones. I happen to like the automatic one because I'm all over the bands and don't really want to fuss with the knobs. And the amplifier I'm running is automatic as well. It's an SG500 by SGC. PALSTAR makes a 1500 watt automatic tuner that uses a differential capacitor and an inductor, and that one, from what I understand, is pretty bulletproof, and there's no connections other than you feed RF into it and some power, and you might take a look at that. I don't know what your budget is like, but that's significantly more money than this MFJ was. So I hope that helps. WI2W.
Did you say the PALSTAR was, you said the tuner, what was the power output capability?
On the PALSTAR, it's full legal limit and then some. Very rugged components, heavy duty, traditional large differential capacitor and a roller inductor. So, you might check that. I think they call it the HF Auto, and that's a current product. You can look for it on their website. And I don't know too much about it, so I'm not recommending it. I'm just, I don't know anybody that has one, but it's something you might want to consider looking into.
The PALSTAR is a automatic tuner. Is that what you said?
Yes, it is an automatic tuner. It only requires a couple of watts to activate, and it's pretty bulletproof. You can even remote it, as far as from what I read.
Okay. Does it have 230 volt capacity or capability, rather?
Are you asking if the tuner will take 230 volts? I don't know what the power requirements are for the tuner.
Okay, because I have 220 as well as, 110 here, of course. But because I had a 220 drop out of my mains installed about 6 months ago at the house here, and in preparation for this project as well as another one. And I think the 220 route is much more gives you better efficiency at that level than the 110. 110 pulls almost 25 amps on, I think, on the Ameritron, and the 220 version is much less than that. And by the way, speaking of such things, Ameritron is a separate corporate structure from MFJ. I'm told. I don't know what difference it all makes, but that's what I'm told.
Yeah, just for clarification, I'm talking about an antenna tuner manufactured by Palspar, not an amplifier. It's called the HF Auto, and it's an antenna tuner, not an amplifier.
Okay, sounds good. Are they marketed by, individually? In other words, do they have dealers, or how do they market?
I know, I think Ham Radio Outlet may carry them, but I think you can probably also buy direct. But I would go to the PALSTAR website for info.
Okay, yeah, we'll do. All right, that sounds great. I'll take a look at that. Do you know if the automatic tuners, do they cut any corners, figuring that the automatic process is much quicker and easier to... the automatic process would theoretically make it easier to not screw it up.
I don't know that I'd say that. One thing you want to look into is to find out what the tuning power is, because it might not like being fed 1500 watts right off the bat when you switch to a new band. You may have to lower your power for the tuning process down to 20 or 100 watts or something. So make sure you follow that rule. Otherwise, the magic smoke might leak out.
Okay, yeah, that stands to reason, I guess. Because I'd be wanting to go from band-wise, from 10 all the way up to, or down to 160. That's what I'm shooting for at the moment.
All right, very good. Well, good luck, WI2W.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry, I didn't get the handle.
Sorry, name is Steve.
Okay, Steve. Thank you very much for your help. WR2W, I didn't get the last one. This is N2NBR.
Whiskey India 2 Whiskey. Whiskey India 2 Whiskey, okay. W2CH.
WI2W is what you said, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, I did. W2CH, go.
Different things. One is a question, and then I wondered, I don't know, even in that range, is this a amplifier you're looking for that's solid state for that output? I don't even know. I don't have it, so I'm not sure. Or with tubes at that range. And the other thing, and I don't know the brands otherwise, I mean, used to be companies like Henry and others that made higher power amplifiers. I know it's a separate line, Ameritron, like Mirage is for VHF, UHF, and so on, Vertronix, and so on. Now, with MFJ, I have a large VHF, UHF tuner that does up to a few hundred watts, and I had trouble with the first one. It came out a year ago with the UHF, gave me some trouble. I sent it back in October to them, to MFJ, and they sent me, it's just a manual tuner, two knobs for VHF, three for UHF, and they sent me another one new, but it took me calling them, and they didn't have one in stock, and I got another in December, and it seems to do the same thing. Now, I don't know how they might be with their HF ones, but I just thought I'd throw that comment in about my experience with this type of tuner with MFJ. I don't know if many people have it. It's the MFJ 923. It's irrelevant to HF, but just as a comment dealing with MFJ. And the other comment was about what type of amplifier you're looking into. W2CH back to, I think, W2NBR.
W2CH into NBR. I remember now we're talking two different companies here, although they are, I guess, affiliated with one another one way or another. But MFJ does not build the amplifiers. Ameritron does, even though they happen to be in Starkville, Mississippi. Area code or not, but our area code, or it must be the same area code. Maybe zip code is a better way to define that. But anyway, they're two separate corporate structures, and so it's possible that, you know, their customer service units are separated.
Yeah, I'm not saying, right, the amplifier might be fine. Maybe this was just one thing. I have other MFJ items, so it might be fine, but I've heard good and bad about them, and of course they are different divisions. Now, I'm just wondering myself, just to ask you, is this type of amplifier always in this power range a tube type, or are they very expensive when they're solid state, if they are in this power range?
One I have in mind is the ALS 1300. That is all solid state, it uses, you know, without getting into too much details here, I think it uses a half a dozen or so power transistors to get up to that power level of 1200 watts. And I know that there is a very wide range of power tubes that are used in these amplifiers, and some of them are very, very expensive. You know, the difference between a Chinese-made tube in one case and exactly the same number of the tube made in the USA is vastly different in price for some reason. And you know, that given that possibility, that's probably the main reason why I lean towards the solid state.
Yes, that is a point. That's good. So they do have these higher power in solid state. I wasn't sure. Yes, I know they're the Chinese tubes, the Russian tubes, like Svetlana, I think, was one, and then the American ones like iMac are pretty expensive, so that's a good move to look into. Okay, that's just a comment back to you, and those were my thoughts, and I'm sorry I can't advise you more. Palstar, I know of, they have a website. I'm not sure what the dealers are, but they do handle high-power tuners, but I don't know even as much as you were told by the other station, other than I know of them as far as that. So that is one like he advised you to look into. N2NBR, W2CH.
Back to you, Gordon.
Very good. This is a good colloquy. Anybody else want to chime in on either the amplifier or the tuner? Yeah, well, thank you both, N2NBR and the group, and also Steve and to Ray. Thank you for that. Very good. All right, our next commenter is none other than W2S, Mr. Randy, K2BR.
Yeah, thank you, Gordon. Good evening to everyone on the net. Many of you know that I'm working with Gordon and Carl Frank and Rick, who's on the net tonight, the things that we set out to accomplish is to enable a voice over IP telephone system across the broadband hamnet. And so I'm very happy to announce that we've been able to accomplish that and actually set up a little bitty but effective PBX that's running on, of all things, a Raspberry Pi. And we've got some voice over IP phones, and downstairs here in my lab next to the Radio Shack, I've got a bunch of broadband hamnet nodes and a mix of the newer Ubiquiti equipment as well as the older Linksys equipment. Both work just fine, and with some simple configuration instructions that I've cobbled together, but and I'm having people test and critique so we can edit these things. It looks like the basic setup will ultimately be fairly simple and not too painful, but once you get this going, you've got a private telephone system for whatever purposes you might choose to use it. So we're having a great deal of fun with that. I wanted to share that with folks. We'll be posting more information on the ComTech group, on the Yahoo groups, as well as my website, WU2S.com. Back to net control.
Alrighty. Very good. Well, I already have your first edit. When you go to the browser, you actually put the address of your PBX in there. You should probably reference the IP address that you pulled in step 1A, the IP address that you reserved is the one you want to do that. Anyway, the other thing I need to do is I need to change my PBX host name to RAS PBX. I haven't done that. I'm still doing something else, but anyway, I've imaged with the operating system the card you gave me plus the card I had, and so I'm using the card I have, so I have at least the core image, you know, without the PBX. Actually, is that true? Yeah, on there already. You're right. Without, let me think, how does that work? Anyway, yes, I have the asterisk core image on a card ready to go, so I can give that to whoever you want me to give it to, Randy. In any case, it's very exciting. I also want to point out that Gary is going to be working on stuff. KD2DDK, who's also on the net, is going to be working on setting up a net with both the Grandview phones that Rick got us, and also the Cisco phones that are also out there, and that'll be very entertaining. Alrighty, with that in mind, what's really kind of cool is that as these nets mesh, we're actually going to be able to have trunking between us, so you'll be able to dial from a dialing directory. Other extensions that will appear and disappear from the net as time goes on. We thought this would be a really fun thing to do, learn a lot about voice over IP. And also, we would also have the ability to render this for OEMs and other served agencies that we might help out during emergencies. And if you wonder whether or not these phones are really common, I walked into my own town, and I know our phone system's over 10 years old, and there are voice over IP phones in that office, in the offices of the borough of Bergenfield. So theoretically, depending on whether they're using the SIP protocol, or they're using SCCP, which is Cisco's proprietary protocol, and both you can flip back and forth between those at the drop of a hat. It's really good, and you know, we could conceivably